We're closing in on that time of the year when the Motion Picture Academy holds its annual fiesta of self-congratulation, the Oscars Awards Ceremony. Hi, I'm Dan Webster, host of Movies 101. And on this week's show, Nathan Weinbender and I will discuss what we think of this year's nominations. And we'll also talk about two movies that we recently saw, M. Night Shyamalan's latest offering, Glass, and Peter Jackson's historical documentary, They Shall Not Grow Old. So don't touch that dial, because another edition of Movies 101 is coming up next, right here on Spokane Public Radio.
When you hear us say, listener-supported public radio, what are we really saying? Public radio is shorthand for thought-provoking, well-crafted, stimulating programs. Listener-supported means it's your money that pays for those programs. And not only the programs, but the transmitters, the computers, the electricity, everything it takes to bring you those programs. So here's a very large thank you to you, the listener, in listener-supported public radio.
Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that continues to miss its third member, Mary Pat Truthart, who's doing social justice work in the country of Myanmar. That's particularly unfortunate this week because the Motion Picture Academy just announced its Oscar nominations. Like the officials working Sunday's NFC Championship football game, the 8,000-plus voters in the Motion Picture Academy don't always get things right. But at least Nathan and I are here to straighten them out, which is what we'll do in the second half of the show. Before that, though, we're going to look at two recent releases. First, M. Night Shyamalan's film Glass, which he has constructed as the third, but only possibly, final part of a trilogy that includes Unbreakable and Split. And then, They Shall Not Grow Old, a uniquely made documentary about World War I made by the New Zealand filmmaker Peter Jackson. Let's begin by delving into a superhero origin story. And that story would be by none other than Shyamalan, the guy who achieved widespread fame with his third feature film, 1999's The Sixth Sense, but who, gradually over the years, began to seem more like a one-note storyteller, whose basic conceit was a plot featuring a twist ending. His latest effort, Glass, connects two of his previous films, 2000's Unbreakable and 2016's Split, a pair of films that introduced us respectively to three characters with ultra-human, or super, if you will, powers. Elijah Price, played by Samuel L. Jackson, David Dunn, played by Bruce Willis, and finally, a collection of personalities embodied in a young man named Kevin Wendell Crumb, played by James McAvoy. The conceit this time involves a therapist, played by Sarah Paulson, who, once the three have been incarcerated in the same mental hospital, tries to convince them that they aren't super at all, but merely delusional. Far more cerebral than action-packed, Glass strives to combine comic book metaphysics with what might pass for a bit of Nietzschean ideology to make larger statements about human abilities. That striving, though, seems more than a bit of a stretch.
And I think if you haven't seen Unbreakable in a while, and I had not, I recommend you go back and watch that again before walking into Glass. Walking into the movie Glass, not the act of walking into like a pane of glass, because I think you might be lost. I would have been. I went back and rewatched Unbreakable. I hadn't seen it in 15, 16 years. I actually think it holds up pretty well. I mean, it was one of those movies that was so anticipated at the time because it was his follow-up to The Sixth Sense, which was such a massive hit, a cultural phenomenon, let's not forget, the second highest grossing film of 1999 behind only Star Wars The Phantom Menace, which is a crazy achievement. And I remember at the time finding Unbreakable somewhat of a disappointment because it has this terrific hook, this fact that the Bruce Willis character slowly reveals that he might be immortal, or he can't be injured because he's the sole survivor of this cataclysmic train crash.
And he himself has some sort of a sixth sense that he right. can detect evil.
When he touches people, he sees their sins, yes. and it's revealed that he is some kind of superhero, and the Glass character played by Sam Jackson is a supervillain. And then the
brilliant
movie,
supervillain. And then the Lex Luthor personified.
Yeah, yes. Lex Luthor, eat your heart out. Yeah. And then the movie just kind of stops. It's got a really abrupt, strange ending.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of forgotten about. It's had sort of a second life, and now we've got the sequel in Glass with Split bridging the gap. And I think as a follow-up to Unbreakable, it works pretty well because as the movie begins, the Bruce Willis character has become an avenging angel in the streets of Philadelphia, and then he ends up in this institution with his old nemesis and with the Beast, quote-unquote, played by James McAvoy. And like Unbreakable, this is another deconstruction of comic book conventions, mm-hmm. of comic book tropes. And in fact, a lot of the characters in Glass will say, well, you know, in comic books, this usually happens. It's like you're in a bad Kevin Smith right. movie or something.
Yeah.
That dialogue is really awkward. And like Unbreakable, this is a pretty small scale movie, despite being about comic book characters in the real world. And it's really deliberately paced. And we have lots of dialogue with the Sarah Paulson character explaining what's going on and who these people are, explaining their functions in the story to them, essentially. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, I found the middle segment of Glass really compelling because there is this idea that maybe this is some kind of shared psychosis. Maybe they're not superheroes. And they imagine that they are, and so therefore the super strength they have is some kind of side effect of that. And you're sort of convinced of it for a while before the movie then just upends all of that and goes into this big brawl in a parking lot that seems to go on forever and is really awkwardly staged and kind of indifferently photographed. So this is a weird movie. It almost feels like it was a first draft, like there's not enough here because it builds up for so long, and then, like Unbreakable, it just stops. It doesn't end so much as it stops, even yeah. though it has, like, four different twists right, at the right. end. It's really strange. I don't know if he's going to keep going with this.
Well, I hope not. I mean, yeah. One of the main problems I had with Glass is all the self-referential stuff. The most obvious one is Shyamalan always puts himself in his own movies, mm-hmm. and not always for the better.
And in this one, his cameo is a callback to his cameo in Unbreakable. Like, you're going to remember that
yeah,
19
yeah,
years later.
I certainly didn't remember it.
Yeah.
But also, he makes other remarks throughout the film. One is he's talking about Comic-Con and likening what's going on or some of the characters to a Comic-Con convention. That's not going to speak to everybody. That's going to speak to a specific audience. Most people, I would think, of adult age might know what Comic-Con is when they think about it,
yeah,
but they're not going to go in deeply into it.
Well, but at the same time, though, all of the ways in which he's over-explaining comic books, that doesn't scan, though, because that audience is already going to know all that stuff.
Right, exactly. So either you're going to get it or you're not going to get it. But the second problem reference is he talks about magic. Magic is a wonderful thing. And you go to look at somebody like David Blaine or David Copperfield, and you go, wow, how did he do that? You know it's a trick. If you don't know how the trick works, then it's wonderful. But then that is all Shyamalan has, is magic. And he reveals himself being a magician, but he reveals his tricks. He can't yeah. not help but reveal it.
And
so
it'd
that's
be like
there's
if David
sense.
Copperfield did a TED talk of how he did the trick you
exactly.
just saw
look,
after
look,
the trick.
Yeah. Aren't I so smart and yeah. wonderful how I did that? So to me, when it's all said and done, Glass, of the three films, is probably the least interesting of them.
Yeah, but it's got interesting ideas in there. It's yeah. just, does he get to the center of them?
Yeah, and yeah. I don't. Well, yeah, yeah. I don't know the center of them.
We can't spoil anything.
Will the center hold or yeah, yeah. You know, is there anything there? That was Glass. Let's move to They Shall Not Grow Old. Peter Jackson, known to most of us as the Oscar-winning director of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, took the title of his world-worn documentary from the 1914 poem For the Fallen, written by Lawrence Binyon. Just as Binyon was honoring those members of the British Expeditionary Force who died in the war, Jackson's intent was to honor his own veteran grandfather who survived the conflict despite being severely wounded, but who never fully recovered. Made for Britain's Imperial War Museum, They Shall Not Grow Old focuses on the war as it was fought in the trenches, and Jackson, besides using the voices of actual veterans, lens gives the archival film footage a modern sense, both by adjusting the varied frame speeds to a more contemporary setting and by colorizing much of the actual war scenes. The result is a film that feels startlingly fresh, reviving for today's audiences the full horror of a conflict that was known originally, if mistakenly, as the War to End All Wars.
This does feel like a museum piece in a way, more than a standard documentary. And so it makes sense that the Imperial War Museum would have been behind this. But I think as a monument, it is pretty moving and often quite fascinating. Some of the things that Jackson focuses on, that he has these veterans, none of whom are alive anymore, obviously.
No, because their voices were recorded years and years ago by historians.
Right. Some of the things that he focuses on are the things that they don't talk about in documentaries usually about wartime, which is just the conditions of living,
day-to-day, what they ate.
What each meals were, where they slept, what the sanitary conditions were like, which is non-existent.
Right.
It has a lot to do with the minutia of these guys' daily routines until then it explodes in violence.
Right.
And we get – it feels like a 20-minute chunk that's about the actual war of being in combat, even though the combat they're talking about is, what, 5 or 10 minutes of actual fighting. And he details it, what it was like to be there. And he's also added sound to this footage too.
Yes.
Which I think is actually the most important component. The colorization, it looks more like two-strip Technicolor, which I think is probably appropriate for the time. Some of the footage is a little too distorted or fuzzy. I had a hard time seeing what was going on sometimes. Other times it's so clear that it's almost like you're looking at, like, now footage of,
yes,
of people.
Exactly. And you realize how bad the teeth were of those people back then.
It also made me realize that a lot of British dialects are impossible to understand.
Absolutely.
It might have helped with subtitles. I'm nitpicking here because this is more of a sensory experience and just to get lost in this footage and the voices of the time and what it was like. And just the idea that a lot of these people wanted so badly to serve.
Right.
That's totally different from today. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what struck me, and that so many of them were willing to lie about their ages to serve. Some of these were 14, 15-year-old kids.
I need to say that we both saw this at a special screening on January 21st.
Yeah.
And
in 3D.
In 3D, but it was also playing in 2D in some theaters. They Shall Not Grow Old premiered October 16th at the BFI London Film Festival, and it has not been released for general release. I assume that it will be sometime in 2019, or it'll show up on some streaming service soon. But it's something that if you are interested in war, and particularly World War I, you might want to check out when it's available. At any rate, that was They Shall Not Grow Old. This is Movies 101, and previously we discussed the film Glass. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to run down this year's Academy Award nominations. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Agradezco tu mentir por haberme hecho sentir que me amas, que me adoras y que piensas mucho en mí. Gracias, aunque sé que no me quieres y que nada es verdad, pero al mentir tú prefieres alegrar mi soledad. Antes que te hubiera conocido, nunca había yo sentido lo que era un gran amor. Pero
and we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Nathan Weinbinder and I discussed two recent releases, M. Night Shyamalan's Glass and Peter Jackson's They Shall Not Grow Old. Now, though, we want to run down the just-announced Oscar nominations, letting the Motion Picture Academy know what they got right and, more important, what they got wrong. And they got a lot wrong. Wouldn't you agree, Nathan?
Oh, yeah. Well, they always do. Before we get into that, though, let's look at the Best Picture race because we've got 8 nominees this year.
8? And why 8? You can go up to 10. Please.
Well, it has to do with Actually, I don't know what it has to do with. I don't understand why they don't. It's some kind of ranking system. Like, that's how the best picture voting works, and I've never quite understood it. They should make the rule instead of going up to 10, just make it 10.
Exactly.
Like, make it a flat number.
Exactly.
I don't think they've ever
they
actually
make all the others
up to
5.
10. I know.
I mean, the important ones.
Right. They might as well make it 10. Anyway, yes. Here are your 8 nominees for Best Picture. Spike Lee's Black Klansman, Black Panther, Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favorite, Green Book, Roma, A Star is Born, and Vice. And I want to say, for as good a year as 2018 was, this is a pathetic list of films. Even though there are some really good titles in here, 2 of them were on my top 10 list. I think 3 of these movies are flat out bad. And that's Bohemian Rhapsody, Green Book, which we never reviewed, but that's terrible. And Vice, which I'm really baffled as to how those are even in the Best Picture race. I can understand how they're maybe in the acting conversation or some of the technical awards. I mean, I think Rami Malek being nominated for Bohemian Rhapsody
is for Best Actor.
Or Christian Bale for Vice. I'm not going to quibble with that.
No.
But as films, the Best Pictures of the year, when we don't have If Beale Street Could
if
Talk
Beale
in the conversation.
Street Could Talk.
Come on.
You and I have speculated about this. A lot of what goes on here is the companies behind these movies do their best to send out screeners, to buy ads,
to
do whatever they can to campaign for these. And Annapurna, the company that's become the new A24, basically, because what they put out is basically really good stuff, they must have dropped the ball in screeners. They must have done that because I cannot believe that people who saw that movie, and we saw it after the voting, but we live in Spokane, Washington.
Yeah.
How could you put some of these other movies on that list and not If Beale Street Could Talk?
Unless you didn't see If Beale Street Could Talk.
Exactly. That movie deserved to be Best Director, Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Supporting Actress. It did get that.
Yeah, for
but
Regina
King. It deserves all those.
The big thing here, though, is Roma's nomination. It's the first Netflix film to be nominated for Best Picture. The Oscars have sort of famously had something of an antipathy towards streaming-only films. And obviously, that spell has broken because Roma got a total of 10 nominations right alongside The Favorite. And even though I'd like to complain about the inclusion of something like Green Book or Bohemian Rhapsody, both of which are crowd-pleaser movies that a lot of people seem to like, I'm just not one of them, it's kind of incredible that a black and white foreign language film, Roma, and something like The Favorite, which is this caustic, queer, period comedy, the fact that those are the 2 films that have got the most nominations is great.
Yeah.
And I love both of those movies, and I hope that they win a lot because they certainly deserve to be in the conversation.
Yeah, and I have no problem with Black Panther being up there either.
No.
Black Panther was a unique film from last year,
yes.
A unique superhero film that touched on racial issues, that touched on some of the most important issues that are facing the world today. And it was in a superhero movie.
Yeah,
it was
very entertaining. And also, Black Panther got a lot of nominations for its costumes and its production design, very deserved. I think that the Academy has always been stingy when it comes to both comedy and action and horror as well.
Mm-hmm.
They're just sort of looked down upon. And hopefully the Black Panther's nomination will change that because it would be nice to see more of those films.
That's what made the winner last year, The Shape of Water, so interesting and so unique.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, movies like that never get nominated, much less win. How about Spike Lee? He finally gets nominated for Best Director.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think this is his best movie.
No.
I wasn't even a big fan of Black Klansman. And in fact, as far as I'm concerned, Barry Jenkins should be there instead of, I'm trying to think, well, certainly Adam McKay.
Yeah, I would agree with
but
that.
But I think that Spike Lee has in the past deserved nominations. And so I don't have a real problem with that.
No, and honestly, if he won, if it was one of those, you know, they gave it to Martin Scorsese way too late, and they gave it to him for The Departed, which also is not his best film. But hey, whatever. Now Martin Scorsese has an Oscar.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind seeing Spike Lee win. I don't know if he will, but it doesn't make up for the fact. But it does kind of underline the glaring omission of the Oscars and Spike Lee, the fact that he has never been nominated for Best Director, that this is the first movie he's directed to be nominated for Best Picture.
Right.
And he's made some of the great American films of the last 30 years. I mean, it just kind of further illustrates how even though we spend so much time talking about the Oscars and tearing the Oscars apart and analyzing them from the inside out, how little they really matter and how little they really speak to film history and what's going to last the span of time.
How many people saw Cold War? Because Cold War is not even up for Best Picture, and yet Pavel Pawlikowski, the director's up for Best Director.
Yeah, and that's great, though. I love when a foreign film can sneak into Best Director. I'm happy that Pavel Pawlikowski, who also directed Ida, which won Best Foreign Film a couple years ago and is really good, I'm glad that he got it over somebody like, say, Peter Farrelly for Green Book or whoever directed Bohemian Rhapsody. They don't really want to talk about that. I like little surprises like that.
I think we've talked about actor in the leading role, Christian Bale, Bradley Cooper for A Star is Born, Willem Dafoe at Eternity's Gate, Rami Malek, Bohemian Rhapsody, Viggo Mortensen, Green Book. That's going to be between Rami Malek and Christian Bale.
I think so. And they both actually have a lot in common, those performances, in that they're physically transformative. Right. And they have the added challenge of an actor portraying somebody that everybody is familiar with, both in terms of the way they look, the way they carry themselves, the way they talk. I think both are technically proficient. I think the biggest omission in this category, you probably know what I'm going to say, is Ethan Hawke in First Reformed. Mm-hmm. I thought he might have had a chance of sneaking in there. I believe he got a SAG nomination. Paul Schrader was nominated for his screenplay. That's also the first time Paul Schrader, who again has written some of the greatest American films ever made, has ever been nominated for an Oscar. So I was sad to see Ethan Hawke left off because I think it's some of the best work of his career.
Yeah. Well, what about actor in a supporting role? I'm trying to think. I liked Sam Elliott in A Star is Born. Richard E. Grant, Can You Ever Forgive Me? Yeah. Sam Rockwell in Vice. Mm. That was, you know, I like Sam Rockwell, but I don't think that was a really strong role.
No.
Adam Driver, Black Klansman, and Mahershala Ali for Green Book.
I think Ali will probably win it.
Two times in a row?
Two times in 3 years. I would like to see Sam Elliott win just because he's great in that film. I think that Richard E. Grant is maybe my favorite performance of the five, but I think they're probably going to give it to Mahershala Ali. But, you know, that could change. Green Book has actually been spurring a lot of debate. There's a lot of backlash against it right now. So it's totally possible that when the awards actually come out that it's not even going to be in the conversation anymore.
When we talk about actress in a leading role, Yalitza Aparicio for Roma.
That was fantastic.
What an amazing nomination there.
First time actor.
But I would be surprised if it went to anybody but Lady Gaga.
See, I think Glenn Close is the favorite because she's never won.
It's her seventh one.
Yeah, she's never won. I don't know if many people saw The Wife. Mm-hmm. It's certainly not my favorite Glenn Close performance ever. It's not my favorite performance of the five, I don't think, but I think she'll probably take it. I love the fact that Yalitza Aparicio was nominated and Marina de Tavira, who is her co-star, was nominated for supporting, which was also a huge surprise. I didn't think that would happen. It goes to show that there's a lot of goodwill towards Roma.
But
hang on, the biggest omission in Best Actress, Toni Collette in Hereditary. Now that was the performance of the year. And the fact that the Academy couldn't appreciate it because it was in some horror movie just shows that they lack imagination sometimes.
It's interesting that the three women from The Favourite, Olivia Colman, actress in a leading role, and actress in a supporting role, Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz, they all got nominated. That's interesting because I think the strongest category here is actress in a supporting role. Amy Adams was terrific in Vice.
Yeah.
But Regina King, if Beale Street could talk, will probably take this because I think Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz will cancel each other out. And Marina de Tavira, I just don't think that enough people know her
Probably not. It'd be great to see Olivia Colman win too, I have to say. All right, since we're wrapping up here, this could change. We've got a month still. What do you think is the Oscar frontrunner for Best Picture right now?
Best Picture right now, probably Roma.
I think so, too. I think, weirdly enough, it's between Roma and Green Book right now. I can't believe they're in the same conversation, but I don't know. It's totally possible. I'm going to put Roma out in the world and hope that I don't jinx it. It'd be great to see that win.
You and me both. And that was our look at the Academy Award nominations. This is Movies 101, and I'm Dan Webster. Earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder and I discussed the recent releases Glass and They Shall Not Grow Old. Let's take this moment to thank Jim Tevenin for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners, and we invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again brave the world of contemporary cinema. Until then, remember these words from the Nobel Prize-winning author Ernest Hemingway. Never think that war, no matter how necessary nor how justified, is not a crime. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.